With over 20 years of experience in quantitative and qualitative health and medical studies research, she directed FNS's Farmers Market Incentive Program study and has worked on other WestEd FNS initiatives. In addition, she has participated in numerous federally funded projects, many of which are designed to better understand the impact of public health actions on their targeted populations.
So it looks like we should have provided an incentive of an afternoon snack for more people. So this last presentation is kind of it takes another look at another very important group to this whole farmers market community. So we've looked at the farmers themselves, we've looked at customers shopping there, and then we're now going to look at organizations who help provide these incentives or who have been involved with these incentive programs. So I just page down, right? Okay, so you've heard the story, mine's the same. And although it was sponsored by Eric and his team at FNS, so it is odd to say we're expressing the research, but hopefully you are happy with it. So I guess I wanted to back up a little bit before we got started, because I don't know, you know, when you come to these conferences, a lot of times you want to just go see something you're totally unfamiliar with. And we keep talking about EBT and incentives, and just to give you, and you know, the FNS's goal to bring in more SNAP recipients to shop at farmers markets. And to be honest, this isn't a new goal for the Food and Nutrition Service to have SNAP recipients shop at farmers markets. But in 1996, there was an act that was passed. It was the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act. Part of that act was to go from a paper food stamp system to the electronic benefit transfer system, which, as Sujata noted earlier, had major impacts on these markets who are often, they could be a roadside stand or a stall, and it's, you know, really the farmers there and, you know, family members, community who are working there. So, you know, it's a low overhead operation, if you will. So with this, it really had the impact of, even though we had authorized farmers markets who could accept SNAP, they really at one point couldn't because they didn't have the infrastructure to not only accept the, you know, cards, but the know-how of, okay, how do you deal with the cards? How do you deal with the accounting systems? And there was no training in place. And again, as was pointed out by one of our participants in the crowd, you know, these machines can be very expensive. Over the first thing I'm pointing out is in the past, decade, the Food and Nutrition Service, as well as the Agricultural Marketing Service, has made great strides to bring more, improve access to the SNAP recipients to come back and shop at the farmers markets. And that's been through these farmers market promotion programs. There have been grants where, you know, the outreach, community outreach, promoting, oh, yes, we take SNAP, we can accept your, you know, benefits here. That's been a big part. And also programs that have helped farmers markets on, you know, the how-to. How do you implement an incentive program? Because part of that is letting them know that's there and then something that is a bit of a draw to bring people into the market to influence them. And there have also been these non-federal organizations who have contributed to bringing in SNAP customers into the markets, and that was what we're going to talk about that today. And that was the basis of this study, was figuring out, so who are these organizations who are, you know, helping out and why. These there are these financial and these programs non-financial support provided by private, public, nonprofit organizations to support SNAP-based incentive programs at farmers markets. And the, you know, purpose of these are to, you know, encourage SNAP recipients to come in and improve the purchasing power of the SNAP benefit. So, you know, in some cases it's a dollar-to-dollar match. In other cases it might be, $5 for every 10 you spend. It kind of varies across programs. And also, in some cases, there's, you know, a ceiling on how much they'll match. So what we're going to talk about today, again, is who are these organizations? Where do they come up with the money to fund these incentive programs? What do you need to implement SNAP-based incentive programs? Why are they, involved in these? You know, is it an altruistic thing, or what's their motivating factor? And then a really key part of this that we also wanted to look at was what kind of data do these markets have available to know whether the incentives are actually doing what they want, bringing in more people to redeem their SNAP benefits and shop at the market and sell more produce and SNAP eligible food items. So I'm happy to say that we conducted this study between February and June of 2013, and it seems like now, in the current context of things, this is like 5 years ago. you'll see the picture that will be painted here. That's a good thing, because I think the studies we've heard about today, the focus that FNS has given to these issues has really, and these organizations I'm going to talk about, they've really been this grassroots effort and a lot of work that has happened very quickly. So we had a mix of, it was primarily a qualitative study with interviews with these organizations, we did these key informant interviews with about 141 different key informants at the organization, and 103 organizations. And in most cases, our plan was to talk to two or three, either the program director or the executive director. And so, as you can see by the number of interviews we conducted and the organizations, those people are not always available, or it's a simple, you know, there's only one person who has time to answer the question. So in most cases, it was the program project director. And using Sujata's sample from the first study that we talked about today, we looked at the data for people in the previous year who reported having a SNAP-based incentive program at their market, and they were a market who had actually had SNAP redemptions. So we looked at those, and we worked on coming up, we identified what we felt were pretty well-known, 17 of the large organizations that we knew were involved in these SNAP-based incentive programs. And we used kind of a referral approach sampling method, where we contacted these organizations to participate, and during the interview, who do you work with on these SNAP-based incentive programs? Could we talk to them? Do you have a name? Because as was alluded to earlier, these are not, it's not just one organization involved in these programs, but it takes a village. It's community, could be banks, schools, the YMCA, all kinds working together to make this happen. So then we conducted the qualitative analysis on the interviews that were conducted, came up with themes, and here are the results. So it's a group of relatively small collaborative organizations working at the local level. So most of these SNAP-based incentive programs are, these aren't huge national programs, but they're, working together within the community to make this happen. So it's a combination of, you know, it might be extension services, universities, farm associations, city governments, some state governments, and even we had some health insurance carriers, because some people, some of the organizations, which we'll hear about in a minute, depending on their mission, had a reason to get involved. We further categorized them based on their role. So to make these, you know, when we started looking at, okay, well, how do you have a program? Who's involved? You usually had, of the 103 that we spoke to, we could look at them and say, okay, we have funders. So these are the people who are really responsible for providing the funds for these programs. Then you had coordinators, who were organizations who basically looked into designing the program. They would be administering the money that came from the funders. And then you had supporters, who may be people who are providing other types of support other than financial incentive, like maybe they're providing the space for, you know, the parking lot on Saturday, or the umbrellas and tables that are needed, a variety of different services. And then the operators were most typically the farmers markets themselves. It could be, you know, at the where they actually had the point of sale. So the general characteristics of these organizations, they were small, in general about half had less than 10 employees, with the funder and coordinating organizations, which made sense, typically they would be larger than the others. And for the organizations, most of them, the amount of money, you know, their overall operating budget for the organization, you know, less than 25% of their budget was for these programs. So obviously this isn't the main reason the organization is necessarily in existence. It's one of their missions or goals. And the overwhelming majority, like I said, it was at the local or state level. And interestingly, they had a lot of different reasons for, you know, participating or funding these programs. It varied from increasing access to nutritious foods to trying to influence positive health outcomes, decreasing social inequity, food, you know, the food justice, food sovereignty movements, and increasing the, you know, the local economy. So the farmer wins, the customer wins. So there were a lots of different reasons depending on the type of organization that was involved. So what are these incentives used for? Oh, well, they're for the incentive to give to the SNAP customer. That was actually, that's only a small piece of the puzzle. It's a major piece, but as we found and you heard throughout Sujata's, the other part is administering the incentive. They need money to, you know, reconcile the accounts at the end of the day. In some cases, while you can use the EBT for the, you know, actually purchasing with your SNAP benefits, the form of the incentive may be tokens or paper or something. So there's a lot of, you know, accounting at the end of the day. And also for administration, promoting the program and fundraising, huge. And that was, I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But, you know, especially the coordinators, coordinating organizations, it is a kind of a nonstop effort to bring in money to sustain the programs. So let's see, if we look at it, the largest portion of the support was provided by nonprofit organizations and foundations. So a lot of, you know, philanthropy. And then, as mentioned here, they needed multiple sources of financial support. So in most cases, there's not just one funder or one person even providing or one organization providing non-financial support, but it's a team of people who are organizations who are involved in this. And one of the real problems at the time when we were doing this, when we talked to these people, is that, you know, they would find people who would be interested in providing the money to get the program going, but to sustain the SNAP-based incentive program was almost a full-time job for some of these people working at the markets, because they might have it to go through a year, or there were the interest might change. If you think of a foundation, they may have for, okay, this year our strategic plan is to work with, you know, this, but next year it's a different mission or cause that they're after. Okay, thanks. I thought it was going to say 9.5 or something. Kidding. That was a real challenge for these people, and I think we'll talk in a minute about that, but so a lot of the funds that are needed are actually, you know, these programs are either having people volunteer their time, or some of the funds are needed to actually go out and do fundraising efforts. Factors for success. How do these organizations know if they're successful? While they need the funding and financial support, it's some of these other types of, maybe you could consider them in-kind, but having organizations or groups who will help with marketing, outreach, and promotion of the SNAP-based incentive program. And then they tended to define their success in terms of their own organizational mission. So if I'm, Kaiser Permanente and I'm putting in my money, maybe mine is to, health disparities. I want to promote the program or be involved because my main mission is health disparities. So we saw that most of them were pretty parallel in what their organizational mission was and the reason that they're supporting these organizations or the SNAP-based incentive program. And that general consensus between the funders and the coordinators that increased sales was a measure of success. So if you're selling more fruits and vegetables, that's great. And then having repeat customers. So it's one thing to bring somebody back, but you want to build your customer base at the farmer's market. So if you're at the operator level or you're the farmer, to you, it's, oh, please come back. So sustaining your customer base. And then the last part of this is we wanted to see what kind of quantitative data was out there on how, you know, this, okay, so these are your measures for success, but what are you collecting to monitor your programs, look at their success? So we had a little over half who claimed that they were doing some type of evaluation of their programs, and we asked some of them if they would be willing to share their data. We did have a small number who shared market-level data so that we could see how they would look at, okay, well, this incentive program at this particular market really did have an impact. And although, you know, the data, they did have data, it was very wide-ranging in terms of the quality and the thoroughness, or having things, the actual items that one might want to look at. So, for instance, very few had the average return visits for SNAP customers, but many had the total number of incentives redeemed or the total number of SNAP benefits redeemed. So it was it varied widely. So generally they're participating because they're fulfilling their organizational member. There are many different organizations that need to be involved for these programs. It's not just one. Sustainability is a large problem, and that at that point, there wasn't a lot of data out there to really evaluate how well these programs are working. And I just wanted to put this up because just like the SNAP-based incentive programs, it took a lot of people to help make this successful, the least of which were some of our technical advisory committee members who are from farmers market organizations or SNAP-based incentive programs who helped us. So thank you.
So we have some time for some questions. So if all the speakers would come up, then if anybody has questions, we can ask those now. I do actually want to start off with one question of my own, though, for Melissa. And that's the categories. One of the things we, of course, had to start with a categorization system to just start the research, and what you saw was a post hoc group of categories. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes. So that was when we first started this with Eric and his team. The plan was that, you know, what they envisioned of the structure was there were going to be basically three types of organizations. So you'd have large, like, umbrella organizations who provide all the funds for these. Then you'd have type two organizations who were the people applying for the funds and administering the funds. And then the type three organizations who would be small funders, maybe at the you know, Chamber of Commerce level, and working at this. But, you know, it was as we moved forward. So that's why when I said, you know, we did the sampling, we picked 17 large at the time, it would be the type ones, because we looked at people who we thought were just the funders. But we started, even when we were developing it and working with the technical committee, advisory committee, the more we got into it, we realized it really wasn't, you know, these neat categories, and, you know, because they were all different types, and they so were the non-financial support was as important in some ways as the financial support. So it really became a whole, and that, if you look at the paper, you can see a lot of the community, a cluster. That's why I put the grape cluster up there, that it wasn't a hierarchical, but more of an interactive, small grapes, big grapes, medium, working together. Does that answer?
The focus group folks didn't know the answer to that question, but my understanding would be that some SNAP offices take it upon themselves to put some flyers out into the community, and I would not be surprised if the market themselves thought that would be a good way to attract folks. Most of the folks in the focus groups said that they were not that concerned about using their EBT card. As a matter of fact, one of the most compelling things that was shared with us is that they would not be surprised if a lot of the folks working at the farmers market as cashiers and vendors are also on SNAP benefits themselves. And the as I said before, the use of the card makes it a lot less obvious as opposed to
token.
So, yeah. So I don't see that as overwhelming. We had a national sample there. There could be something unique about the three communities that we were in as well.
Yeah, the survey found. Just add to that. The survey did find about 15% cited social stigma. But a lot of the farmers markets, the way that the SNAP benefits are redeemed are tokens or coupons. And so as Keith pointed out, with the actual EBT card as a way to redeem your benefits, it's less obvious. For example, at the grocery store, you know, everyone's using a debit card, and no one can really tell the difference between an ATM debit card and a SNAP EBT card. So I think that that may reduce the concern about social stigma if they have an EBT card system rather than a token system.
Very good. Before you start, I want to say one thing. For the incentive provider study, we offered for organizations to let us thank them, which is not something that's usually done in research, but because of the type of research, we wanted to give them that opportunity, and I think everybody but one organization accepted.
Right.
And our next questioner is actually from one of those organizations that participated, so we'd like to thank you publicly. Generally,
the concept,
yes, but different programs are done in different ways. Some are match every dollar up to $20. Some are $5 one time. So there's almost as many variations as there are markets. Yes. That's actually a question for our program office. I'm in the research office, so we're customers of that data too. So that would something that would have to go to our SNAP retailer policy and management division. Okay, now the person back here I've been missing. I'm going to weasel my way out and say I'm a researcher, not a program person. Again, that's not a question our research arm handles. That's a program question.
Can I, as a non-FNS person, say something? Oh, I'm scaring him.
This is not the perspective of the Food and Nutrition Service.
I think one thing, and that's why I was saying that's changed, you've probably been reading about the food insecurity nutrition incentive, which is very, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, but it's an incentive, but it's it probably, and I think this data probably had a lot of influence on it, in addition to a lot of these funding organizations who've been really pushing for sustained incentive programs. It's only, it's not going to solve everything because, one, it's not just for farmers markets, as Eric said. It's for, any stores. A lot of these incentive programs we talked about today limit the use of the incentive to local food, U.S., or grown within the state. The Finney funds will allow it to be for, it could be fruits and vegetables from South America and those kinds of things. And, there are so many stakeholders in this, from the farmers to the consumers. So not everybody's happy with that, but from the nutritional standpoint and talking about the seasonability of some of these programs, it does provide something, that hopefully will work, for certain places in a broader environment. But I think we're all still holding our breath on that.
Those grants are going to be coming out of the National Institute for Food and Agriculture. Information available, I believe it's still available on grants.gov.
One component of the survey, we had three methods. One was the focus group, one was the survey, and we also used GIS data to look at the proximity of retailers, shoppers versus non-shoppers, and so forth. And there were a lot of findings from that, but the main thing that we found was that among the non-shoppers, there was more retailers within immediate vicinity of their residence compared to the shoppers. And so our takeaway from that was that, for the non-shoppers, they were just saturated with other retailers that were essentially competing, competing for that. But the other variables that we looked at, we didn't find any differences in terms of GIS data with shoppers and non-shoppers other than that one area. But the report will have a lot more information on the different things that we found. Is just too much to sort of get into here, but I encourage you to look at the report and look at that section.
All the way in the back.
That's a good question. I had one quick slide that the sample was drawn from one of the other studies. There were 65 farmers markets in the sample from 23 states, and Michigan was one of them. We actually list the cities in the area. So one of the limitations is that this entire sample for the survey respondents is based on SNAP participants within a catchment area around those specific farmers markets. I don't have the list, but we do have that data that actually specifies the farmers market, the sort of the target farmers market. And so the questions would actually refer to that particular farmers market. So it's pretty much tied to specific farmers markets. So there may be one in Michigan that does have the variety versus others in Michigan that do not have it, but I don't have the exact names off the top of my head. Did you have-